Chapter 36. Indeed, Vespasianos, with his boy, Titos, was detained for some time at Ptolemais, consolidating his forces. Now Plakidos was scouring Galilee. Indeed, he had begun by doing away with a great number of those who fell into his hands. But these were weak Galileans and who were exhausted by the flight. But he observed that the combatants always took refuge within the cities which I had enwalled. So he proceeded to attack Yadfot, the strongest of all of them. Indeed, he expected to have no difficulty in capturing it by a sudden assault, and by this means to procure for himself a high reputation among his commanders, and to acquire a considerable advantage for their future expedition. For he thought that once the strongest place had fallen, terror would induce the rest to surrender. Yet truly, he greatly failed in this hope. For being forewarned of his approach, the Yadfotians went outside the city, where they awaited his coming, and burst unexpectedly upon the Roman. And being both a large body and well prepared for battle, and kindled by the thought of the danger threatening their fatherland and their women and children, they quickly routed the Romans. Indeed, they wounded a large number of them, but they did away with only 7 of them, because the Roman retreat was made in good order, and because their bodies, being completely protected, received only superficial wounds, while the Judean assailants, lightly equipped and opposed to heavy armed regulars, kept their distance and did not venture to come to close quarters with them. But 3 men on the Judean side fell, and a few were wounded. Indeed, Plakidos, finding himself too feeble for an assault on the city, made a retreat. But Vespasianos, impatient to invade Galilee himself, now set out from Ptolemais, after drawing up his army for the march in the customary Roman order. Yet indeed, the light-armed allied troops and the archers were directed to march in advance, to repel any sudden incursions from their foes, and to explore woodlands which looked suspicious and which were suited for the concealment of ambuscades. Then followed a contingent of heavy-armed Roman soldiers, both infantry and cavalry. These were followed by a detachment composed of 10 men from every 100, carrying both their own baggage and the necessary instruments for marking out the camp. And after these came the pioneers, both to straighten crooks in the road in order to level the rough places, and to cut down obstructing woods in order to spare the army the fatigues of a toilsome march. Now behind these, Vespasianos posted both his personal equipage and those of his commanders, along with a considerable number of their cavalry to protect them. He himself rode behind with both the picked infantry and cavalry and his spearmen. Now after these came the cavalry units of the legions. For 120 cavalry are attached to each legion. Now these were followed by the mules, carrying the city destroyers and the other machines. After these came both the commanders and the prefects of the cohorts and the tribunes, with an escort of picked soldiers. Next came the ensign surrounding the eagle, which is at the head of every Roman legion, because it is both the king and the strongest of all the birds of prey. And it is regarded by them as the symbol of dominion and an omen of victory over whomever they march against. Now these consecrated emblems were followed by the trumpeters. And behind them came the phalanx, marching six abreast. A centurion, according to custom, accompanied them to oversee the order of the ranks. But behind the infantry, the servants attached to each legion followed in body, conducting the mules and other beasts of burden which carried the soldiers' baggage. But at the end of the legions came the crowd of the mercenaries. Last of all, for security, there was a rear guard composed of both infantry and heavy-armed soldiers, and a considerable number of cavalry. Proceeding with his force in this manner, Vespasianus reached the borders of Galilee. Here he encamped and restrained the ardor of his soldiers, who were rushing into a war. He was content to parade his armies before their enemies in order to strike them with consternation and to provide them with a season for a change of mind, to see whether they would come to a better frame of mind before a battle should commence. But at the same time, he also made preparations for besieging the strongholds. Therefore, indeed, the general's appearance aroused many to have a change of mind from their revolt, but caused everyone to be struck with consternation. For indeed, when those who were under my command, who were encamping beside a city called Garis, not far from Zippori, were informed both that the war was upon them, and that at any moment they might be attacked by the Romans, they dispersed and fled, not only before it came to a battle, but instead, even before our enemy had even come into sight. Now I, Joseph, was left with a few companions, and I saw that I did not have a sufficient force to attack our foes, and that the minds of the Judeans were crestfallen, that the majority of them, if they could gain the confidence of our foes, would gladly withdraw. Indeed, already I feared for the success of the war. But for the moment, I decided to remove myself as far as possible from the risk of conflict. Now, with the remnant of my troops, I fled for refuge in Tiberias.